And we're holding on Zion and Aleph at the top by the Mishnah. So we discussed the kinui, we discussed the stira. Now let's start with the actual procedure. Kesed oisala. How do they deal with the soita? Merlicha lebeis din shavaisa makam. Her husband brings her to the local beis din, and they check out the basic facts to see that the kinui and the stira, etc. Umoisrim leshnei tamar chachamim, and then they give over to him two tamar chachamim who will accompany them on the way. Shema yavoy alei abaderech, because otherwise the husband may have relations with her on the way, and we learned yesterday that he's also two, and in fact, we learned also that will block the Mesot from having their effect. So therefore, they have to send along Tamar Chachamim to be an escort. Rabbi Yehuda says, you don't need that. Hila Nemanela, her husband himself is believed, if he says, when they come to Yerushalayim, if he says, I didn't have relations with her, we can take him at his word. So the Gemara starts. So what do we see then? So you have, how many people are there in the entourage altogether? You have the two Tamar Chachamim plus the husband, Hatzlasa, which means you have three men. Lema Messiah, which in other words implying that you need Davka three. Two wouldn't have been enough. You can't just have one Tamar Chacham accompanying him. Lema Messiah Le Rav. In that case, should we say that our Mishnah is a proof for what Rav says? The Amr of Yehoda Amr Rav. This that we say in Kiddushin, at the end of Kiddushin, there's a whole sugi over there about the Dinim of Yehud, and it says over there that a man is not allowed to be in Yichud with two women, but a woman is allowed to be with two men. And Rav says over there, Loi Shanu El Be'ir, this is only talking about when you're in the city, Abba Derech, but if it's on the road, Adi Ika Shloisha, then you need to have three. Shemi Yitzarech Echad Mehem L'Nekavav, because one of them might have to go to the bathroom. V'nimse Echad Mehem is Yachad Men Eima Erva. And then one of them is going to have Yichud together with a woman who's also to him. So our Mishnah seems to be proving that, because we're saying that you need two Tamar Chachamim with him, you need two other men, and that way, altogether you have three, and that way, even if one of them goes to the bathroom, you still have two of them there. The answer is loy, not necessarily. I mean, that may very well be true, and that is, in fact, the halacha. But you can't necessarily prove it from our Mishnah. Because halacha ayin retaimah, because here in our Mishnah, there's a different reason why you need two people. Kiech the lever alei sadi, in order that they can be witnesses. If the husband does end up having relations with her on the way, then they'll be able to give eidos to Beis Din that this is what happened, and then they'll know not to give her a drink. If there was only one person over there, then maybe that might not be strong enough evidence to say that she should be also to drink. That you can't give her. Okay. Next, we see from the Mishnah, Tamar Chachamim Ein Kula Amaloi. The next thing we see from the Mishnah is that they sent along specifically Tamar Chachamim, not just regular people. In that case, can we say that our Mishnah is a proof for another statement of Rav, also in connection with the Dinim of Yichud. This that we're talking about, that a woman can be alone with two men in their city, or three men on the road, is only Loishanu Alek Sherin, only if they're kosher people. Ava Pritzin, but if they're Pritzistic people who themselves may get involved in Arayas, Afila Soranami, then even 10 men, a woman is not allowed to be alone with. And in fact, it once happened that there was that 10 men carried out an Eishes Ish in a coffin, pretending that she's dead. And that way they could all have an affair with her. So we see that, when it's Pritzim, then there's no limit. Three is not enough, and no amount is enough. So what do we see from that? The Pashtus, then, that's why our Mishnah says that you have to send them to Tamar Chachamim. Not to say that Tamar Chachamim can never be Pritzim, but they're less likely to be than the general population. So that seems to prove Rav's point. The answer is loy, again, not necessarily can you prove it to the Mishnah. No, because you could say that the reason why in our Mishnah you need specifically Tamar Chachamim, not having to do with the Dinim of Yichud, but just that they're people who will know how to warn him. What do we mean by warn him? So Rashi said what we mean is the very fact that if he ends up having relations with her, that the water is not going to work. You need people to warn him of that. You should be aware. If you're not menukum oven and the whole thing is not going to work, so be careful that you don't ruin the whole thing. I mean, you're bringing her to Yerushalayim because you want to see whether her innocence can be established, and you'll be able to resume your married life. But if you end up having relations with her, and we can go testify to the Beis Din HaGadol on that, then the whole thing won't happen, and you'll end up having to divorce her, and in that case, then you're going to mess up the whole thing. So you need to come to explain this kind of thing here. That's the point of Rashi. According to Tosfos, rather, it's something else. That, we're talking about the, Tosfos doesn't say in so many words, but it seems from what they say, and this is how the Poroshim explain, is that Tosfos is understanding we're talking about actual Hasrar. Namely, we know, we learned way back in Yevamos, that when it comes to a Vadei Sotza, meaning a woman who was definitely Mizana while married to her husband, and we have evidence of it, then if her husband at that point, after that, has relations with her, he's over on a lav, achre asheru tamar, and he's chayav malchus for it. Does the same thing apply to a suffix soja as well? It comes out that Tosfos over here is saying that, yes, the same thing applies to the suffix soja of our Mishnah as well. The husband would be chayav malchus for having relations with her. Therefore, the hasra we're talking about over here is regular, what we usually mean by hasra throughout Shas. They're going to have to warn him, be aware, if you have relations with her, you are going to be chayav malchus.
You're right.
Yeah. So, no, we're talking daraita, according to that. So therefore, therefore we need Tamar Chachamim, which again, not to say you couldn't have regular people do Hasra as well, but again, Tamar Chachamim are more likely to be familiar with the din and be able to give him a proper Hasra. So again, you can't prove from that one way or the other about the din of Yichud. Again, the actual halacha is that this business about two men is only if they're kshedim, but not if they're prutim. And we say so. And we tend to say nowadays that not necessarily can anybody. It's questionable what people can be considered kshedim nowadays. We find in the Gemara and they're in tradition that even some of the Amoraim said, you know, you got to be careful. Don't allow me to be in yichud with me and somebody else or whatever to be in yichud with somebody, implying therefore that maybe you have to have a very high standard for kshedim.
Okay.
Well, meaning in other words that not necessarily can anybody nowadays be on that level. So therefore, therefore in other words, even two men is not necessarily enough. Now, the Mephoshim do point out there's a usual heter when it comes to Yichud, there is a usual heter of Bayr Ve'ir, that if the husband himself is in the city, then there's no problem of Yichud, even with one other man, because her husband may come home anyway. So this is but the husband is around. But the point is, because her husband himself is also to her, therefore Bayr Ve'ir does not apply. Then the Mishnah said Rabbi Yehuda I'm a Bayi L'chola, that Rabbi Yehuda had said that the husband himself can be believed that he didn't have relations with her, and therefore you don't need the two Tamar Chachamim. Tanya, so we learn a Braisa, which expands on that. Rabbi Yehuda I'm a Bayi L'nemen b'kava chomer. We can say that her husband is believed based on a kava chomer. Uman nida shi b'kares, Bayi L'nemen aleha, madach a nida where there's an issur kares and yet her husband is believed. You don't say there's an issur yichud between a man and his wife when she's nida. Meaning, in other words, that you allow the husband to be alone with his wife. You don't worry that he's going to end up that they're going to end up having relations. We don't worry about that. The Gemara in Sanhedrin says about that. That brings on that to put the pasuk from Shir Hashirim, Suga Bashashanim, that the Jewish people are like an orchard with a hedge of roses around it. Roses have thorns on them, but it's not like you couldn't break through the thing, but you wouldn't, not so much because of the thorns, because you don't want to destroy these roses. But the same thing, the issue of Nida, people are careful about that, and even a man and a couple really wants to have relations. If she's Nida, then Suga Bashashan and the Jewish people are generally keep away from that, and they know to be careful with that din. So when a husband and when a wife is Nida, we don't say that they're also in Yichud. Soita, Shiva Lav, like Hoshikin. So a Soita, where there's only a Lav, and as we just discussed, there's a question whether that Lav involves Malchus or not, but even if you say it does, like Hoshikin, how much more so that you should believe him and you shouldn't need anybody else? So not yet. Rabbanan, what would the Rabbanan answer to that? They would say, Hiyan Nisenes. Well, that's exactly it. This factor that you're saying, that the Soita is more lenient because it's only a Lav, that's precisely why we're afraid of it. Nida de Koris, Chamiralei, the Isser of Nida, which is a very strong Isser, it's a very, there's Koris involved, therefore the husband will take it seriously, and he's not going to go and have relations with his wife from a Haman, therefore we can believe him. Sota's lab, whereas the Sota is only a lab, he may not treat it so seriously. So therefore, the Rabbanon argue Adarabba. In the case of a Sota, you have more reason to make it that you have to have the two Tumen Chachamim with him.
In the case of an Anida, it's correct.
In the case of a Sota, it's only a lab. And therefore, and you're allowed to be in Yichud, because the Rabbanon say, because everybody knows it's an Issur Karis, people are careful about such things. Whereas when it comes to an Issur Lav, not necessarily are people going to be so careful. Sometimes people get careless with the smaller Issurim. Which Tosfos points out, based on the continuation of the discussion over here, you could argue the other way around. Sometimes you find in the Gemara where people are more careful with the small things than they are with the big ones. So that the Gemara is going to continue the discussion, but yeah. Okay. So the question is, so therefore, so to the lab, lo chamirale, doesn't consider itself serious for loyma haven, and therefore we can't believe him. Question is, Rabbi Yehuda Kavah Chomer? So you're telling me that Rabbi Yehuda gets his opinion in the Mishnah based on a Kavah Chomer? But Rabbi Yehuda Mikroi Maisula? We actually find that Rabbi Yehuda brought it based on a Pasuk. The Tanya, we learn in another Braisa. The Pasuk says, V'hevi ha'ish es ishto el ha'koyin, the husband shall bring his wife to the Koyin, which means, Minat Torah ha'ish mevi es ishto. Minat Torah, all you need is the husband brings his wife. You don't need anybody else to come along with them. Aval Amru Chachamim, but the Chachamim said most of the Moshe Tumen Chachamim that they should send along with him to Tumen Chachamim Shem Yavei Aleh Baderach, because he might have relations with her on the way.
What does it say?
The pasuk says behavior is just Yisrael Achayin. It's at the beginning of Parashat Sotah over there. Rabbi Yossi Omer continues the Braisa. Rabbi Yossi says, like Rabbi Yehuda in our Mishnah, Baila Neman Aleam Kavachomer, her husband can be believed based on a Kavachomer. So the same argument that Rabbi Yehuda used in the first Braisa, Rabbi Yossi is using in this Braisa. Uman Nidashi Vikaris Baila Neman Aleam Soti Shivalav Le Kolshikin. Omru Loi, so the Chacham answered him Loi. A different argument, not because of the fact, like they said, that on the other, that Kares is something people will take more seriously. We have a different argument. Yes, you can say when it comes to Nida, because she's only Nida temporarily. Eventually, she'll go to the mikveh, she'll be Tara again. Therefore, the husband is able to control himself. He knows he'll be able to be back with her after a while. Tome of a Soita, Shane Laheter. How can he compare that to Soita? If it turns out she's Tomei, then he's never going to be with her again. Therefore, he has this tremendous Yetzahara to have relations with her. The Omer, and not only that, they have a pasuk that expresses the idea, Mayim Gnuvim Yimtiku V'Gomer, that the stolen water is a sweet. Like you have something which is Osir is all the more, the Yetzirah makes it all the more sweet to you. So the very fact that she's Osir to him, not itself, gives him a certain taiva to her. Mayim Gnuvim Yimtiku, stolen water is a sweet.
So stolen water.
No, meaning that you have water, water is tasteless. It's the same water regardless of what. But when it's stolen, all of a sudden, like you know, it feels good to you to drink. And it's a psychological thing, yeah. So, Tosfos Chance points out the reason why we need that pasuk is because, look, I mean, if you have, the husband was suspicious of what's going on with his wife. He's mekane to her. Then there was stira. You would think at that point he hates her. Of course he's not going to have relations with her. No, because on the other hand, Mayim Gnuvim, on the other hand, that may give her a certain attraction to him that she didn't have before. Okay, then the Braisa continues. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Minat Torah, Ish Mevi Es Ishtei El HaKoyen. That Minat Torah, the husband can bring his wife to the Koyen without anybody else. Shenemer Behevi Es Ishtei. Because the pasuk says, the man brings his wife. So what do we see from this Braisa? We see that Rabbi Yehuda is basing himself on a pasuk, actually the same pasuk as the Tanakhama of the Braisa, and I'm going to ask in a second what's the difference between them, but for now, let's set that aside. The point is Rabbi Yehuda says I have an actual pasuk, the Hevi Yehisha Tishtei. So what are you telling me then in the first Braisa that was quoted that instead of using a Kavachomer, the same Kavachomer that Rabbi Yehuda uses in the second Braisa? The answer is Omalu Kavachomer Bredesho Pachua. First he told them the Kavachomer and they slugged it up, based on the reason that we said that, on the contrary, the fact that Nida is an Issur Kares is going to make it more serious to him, and therefore he's less likely to be over on it. Mashen Kinsota is only a lav. So then the Hadam a little and then he mentioned the pasuk as well. Which this is where Tosfos points out that actually that the how do they shlug up with his kavachomer? Not really with the argument that they use kares versus lav, because you could argue the other way around. Maybe adonava, maybe a lav. People are more careful on a lav than they are on kares sometimes. But rather the argument they use against Rav Yossi that nida has a heter afterwards and sota does not necessarily.
Although the Gemara didn't mention that.
The second place in that, that's the thing. So what we have is as follows. The second, it went as follows. The Seder Advarim was, first came the second, the last place that we quoted over here. The Chachamim said that the husband can bring his wife by herself, but Midrabbanan, you need the two Tumim Chachamim. Rav Yossi said that you don't even need the two Tumim Chachamim, you can have a Kav Choymer, that everything is good. And Rav Yehuda says, never mind that, Rav Yehuda says, forget about kavachomers. I'm not up to a kavachomer yet. Actually, no. So the first braisa comes. The first braisa comes first. Rabbi Yehuda says we have a kavachomer. The Chachamim shlug it up based on the argument they use against Rabbi Yossi in the second braisa, and then comes Rabbi Yehuda and says, "Oh, I have a pulse." Okay. Rabbi Yehuda, Heinu Tanakama. The last question is then: isn't Rabbi Yehuda in the last braisa saying exactly the same thing as the Tanakama? They're both saying that b'daraisa the husband can bring his wife. The answer is: ikabinayu aval omru. Yes, but there is a difference. The Chachamim in the braisa, the Tanakama of the braisa, adds this aval omru Chachamim that minat torah the husband can bring his wife alone without needing anybody else. But midrabbanan we want the two tumah Chachamim. Rabbi Yehuda doesn't hold of the midrabbanan we want the two tumah Chachamim. He still holds, look, we have a passage that says, behavior isha tishto, that's good enough. There's an interesting thing. The Taz brings an idea in Yerodea that when you have something that the Torah is explicitly matir, the Chachamim do not have the power to after it. And different Achronim talk about the pros and cons, how that's applied in different places in the Torah, but here's an example of that. According to Rabbi Yehuda, if the Pasuk is telling you behavior isha tishto, that the husband can bring his wife by himself, then Rabbi Yehuda would argue the Chachamim don't have the ability to say Abel Amu Chachamim, but we want to send along the two Tumah Chachamim because we don't fully believe him, because the Torah itself implies that we believe him.
So what? So that doesn't hold, apparently.
Well, the fact is, the halacha is not like Rabbi Yehuda. The halacha is like the Chachamim, that you still need the two Tumah Chachamim. Mishnah continues, they would bring her up to the Beis Din HaGadol, the 71 member Sanhedrin in Yerushalayim, and they would threaten her. Not really threaten, but they would warn her. Kedar Shema Ayman al Eidin Nefashis. The way that they warn Eidin when it comes to Dinin Nefashis. So in Sanhedrin, the Gemara, the Mishnah describes over there a whole Musas Shmuz that they would give to Edim when it comes to Dini Nefashis, the capital cases. They'd give them a whole Musas Shmuz, reminding them what a serious thing it is. You have a life is hanging in your hands, and remember how important Kol Makayim Nefesh Achas Meisrael, etc. They go on and on. Similarly, over here they give her a warning. Because there's two things involved over here. The Mishnah mentions one, and the other one is implicit. One is there's two reasons that they would rather that the whole social ritual does not take place. Number one, it involves erasing the Eivishter's name. And number two, if she's guilty, then she's going to die a horrible death. So therefore they're warning her that if she is guilty, better she should say the truth and not have the whole thing happen. Right?
If she does say she admits,
then nothing happens. What happens is she's also to her husband. Her husband has to divorce her. She loses her ksuba. That's the Mishnah is going to continue that. But that's it. She's not chayiv misa because they didn't give her warning. They didn't give her asra at the time of the znus. There were edim of the steira, but there were no edim tumah. If there were, they wouldn't be taking place anyway. So there was no asra for the znus. So garnished. I mean, she's divorced now and she loses her ksuba, but that's it. So they warn her about that. And actually, the Rama Farshim would say that that's the comparison is Kedarach Shema'ayim and Al Eidin Nefashis is not just the warning that our Mishnah is going to mention that they tell her don't cause the Eivishter's name to be erased. They also warn her, you know what? The same way as we warn Eidin Nefashis, Eidin by Dini Nefashis, that a life is hanging in the balance over here. They warn her also. Look, your own life and the lives of all your descendants in the future are hanging in the balance over here.
When do they condemn to Skila? When they
Skila? There's no skila for the skila is only if she was a naira hamayrasa. Basically, what you have is a woman who commits adultery. There's three possible misses. If the normal case it's chesk. If she was a bas koyin, and the Gemara in Sanhedrin has a long discussion about the details when this applies, when it doesn't apply, then it's sreifa. And if she's a naira hamayrasa, a girl within 6 months after puberty, after her bat mitzvah, and she's a marasa, but not yet have nisuin, then it's skila. But the ordinary day to day case, it would be chesh. Yeah. But then again, here that doesn't apply because there was no hasra. The omer law. So the Beis Din tells her as follows: Biti, my daughter, have a yayin osa. Wine can do a lot of things. You may have drank wine, and that removed your inhibition. Have a schoik osa. Laughter causes.
If she drinks wine.
No, not she's potter, but in other words, they're trying to convince her that okay, you know what? We know you're not the kind of person who would do this sort of thing normally. Maybe you drank too much, and that brought you to do something you wouldn't normally do. Have a schoik osa. Laughter can you know, being silly can do a lot. Have a yaldus osa. Childishness can cause this kind of thing to happen. Have a shechinim aroyim osim, the influence of bad neighbors. Be willing to admit, asil shmaya gadol shenichted b'kedusha. Do it for the sake of the Eibishter's great name that's written in kedusha. Shelo yimocha alamayim, that it shouldn't get erased into the water. So if you're guilty, fine. We don't have to say you're not a terrible person. Maybe it was one of these factors that came into the picture over here and that caused you to do something you wouldn't normally do. But if that's the case, admit it.
So we said if she does admit and doesn't drink, she's able to remarry, but she's not able to remarry the person that she's suspected of being.
Right. Kashem Shatzer Labal Kachasur Laboyo. We'll talk about that extensively later in the Masechta. I saw, by the way, an interesting thing from Rabbi Hananya Eisenbach. We're in one of the big Lubavitcher Rashi Yeshiva. He says, if at the end of the first parak of Tanya, the Alter Rebbe talks about the midot zrois that are in the nefesh of Bahamas that come from each of the four yesodis. Those midot that come from Eish, from Ruach, etc. We said the other day in the Gemara that Eidonim Oivavera Elam Ken Nichnasu Ruach Shtus, and we learned that from Sota. So therefore, we should expect that what the Sota does is somehow related to Ruach. The Alter Rebbe describes four things, four midot zrois that come from yesod haruach: holulus, silliness; Isparus, Letzonus, what is it, like making fun of mockery, yeah. Isparus, pride, boasting rather. Udvorim betalim, and speaking and idle talk. So he says, as I saw in his name. No, these are the four things Alfred ever mentions over there: Holus, Letzonus, Isparus, and Dvorim betalim. So he says, I saw it printed his name, that the four things that the Beis Din tells the suspected soldier over here correspond to those four. Yayin corresponds to holulus, because wine makes you silly. Letzonos corresponds to schoik. They're both like silliness and mockery. Yaldus corresponds to sparus, like children tend to be boastful, young people think that. And Shechinim Arayim corresponds to Dvorim Betalim, because that's what you do with bad neighbors, is you get into idle talk.
What is Kalos Hirsch speaking of?
He doesn't mention Kalos Hirsch. Maybe it's related to one of the four, anyway. Then they tell her things that she doesn't deserve to hear, she and her entire family. What do we mean? So Rashi says, the Gemara is going to explain on other days, what we mean is we tell her stories of the various great figures from Tanakh who did Averis. So Rashi explains, these people, I mean, they were tzaddikim after all, but we're telling her of what they did, even though, I mean, she's not anywhere near on their level. They were great tzaddikim. She's suspected of actual, of actual znus. So really, she doesn't deserve to be put on, like, so to speak, on the same level as them. But we tell her in order to induce her to do shuva, to confess. Look, they did wrong on their level, and they confessed. You should do the same thing. The Rambam has a different explanation of it. The Rambam says what we mean is, for example, we're always going to mention on the base the stories of Reuven and Yehuda. What we do is, now we know the famous Gemara, Koloim Reuven Chota in El Toya, that to say that Reuven actually sinned in the literal way that it says in the pasuk that he slept with Bila is mistaken. But when it comes to the Sota, we tell her it in that way. We actually literally tell her that Reuven had relations with Bila, and yet afterwards he confessed. in order to induce her to do the same. That's what it means. Dvarim Shein Shein Kedai L'Shoyman, that she doesn't deserve to hear such. But usually we try to be Malam Tzchus on.
Exactly.
So Yovel, the Gemara says that he took out his father's bed from Bilah's tent and put it in his mother's tent because he didn't want Yaakov to still be with Bilah. He felt it to be an insult to his mother. How you talking? At least Rachel outranked her, but she's her full sister. Bilah is only a maid servant. Whatever it is, it was an interference where we didn't belong. Yeah. But when it comes to the Sota, the Rambam says, we tell her straight out. We tell her that Reuben actually had relations with Bila, and yet he did Shuvah. That's the Dvarim Shein and Kedai L'Shoyman. She doesn't deserve to be told such a thing. But that's the thing. We tell it to her in order to induce her to confess, which is an interesting thing, by the way. There's an interesting Shuvah in Shuvah Sarama. It's a little questionable whether it's from the Rama or from somebody else from that generation, but whatever, that has a whole complicated case involving where they wrote something that was known to be untrue about somebody in order to try and settle down a machlokas that was going on in a kahila that might have ended up involving the government and caused great danger to the Jewish community over there, whatever. It's a long, complicated sugar, but the Ramah is based on this, based on the Ramah's understanding of our Mishnah, that you see that you're telling what you're doing, you're being Moshi Shemra and Ruben for the sake of avoiding that the Eivishter's name should be erased and for the purpose of bringing Shalom Bayis. So we see that such a thing is possible.
That's what
he's saying. That they not just lie, but actually say false things about a person. We know that Reuven was not really chayte, but yeah. Im amra tmeani, if she says I'm tamei, sheveres tsubasav yotis, then she literally means break, but it means like she considers her ksuba paid off. She loses her ksuba. We'll talk about in the Gemara what that means exactly. The yotis, and she leaves, meaning in other words, she gets divorced, and that's that. The Imam Tahorani, if she says I'm Tahor, Malanoisul Shara Mizrach Shal Pesach Shara Nicanor, then they bring her to the eastern gate, namely the gate of the gate of Nicanor, the gate in the Azara that directly faces the Hechel, because the Pasuk says it has to be Lifnei Hashem. Shasham Mashkinas Asotis, and Matarnas Ayolas, and Matarnas Ayolas, that's the same, in that gate is where the Sota would stand when she drinks. It's also where a woman who gave birth would stand when her Korbanos are being brought, and it's also where Matsota stands when his korbanos are being brought, and they put the blood and the oil on his ear, his thumb, and his toe. The kohen oiches b'begodeha. Now the kohen grabs a hold of her clothes. Rashi says by the neckline. Im nikru unikru, and as he's pulling them, if they rip, they rip. Im nikrumu nikrumu, and if they get torn to shreds, they get torn to shreds. Nikru and Nifrimu, there's several different explanations. The Gemara is going to explain that part of the din is that certain parts of her body have to be exposed as part of this whole ritual. What the difference between Kriya and Prima, Rashi says that like I just said, that Nikru means they just get ripped, and Nifru means they get torn to shreds. There's different other explanations. There's also Nikru can mean torn on a seam, Nifrimu can mean not torn on a seam. The Rambam explains Nikru is vertical and Nifrimu is horizontal. Whatever it is, you grab a hold of them, however it tears. Atro Megalas Luba, until the Kohen uncovers her heart, her chest, the Soyser Asaira, and he also undoes her hair. Takes off her tichel or shetel or what have you and undoes her hair to make her look unattractive. Rabbi Yehuda says if her chest was attractive, then you don't uncover it. And if her hair is attractive, you don't uncover it. Because we'll learn in the Gemara later, tomorrow, on Daches, that Rabbi Yehuda is concerned about the problem of hearer, that the bystanders may see and start having improper thoughts. So the Torah commands it. Well, the Torah actually only openly commands about the hair. The body will learn it from an extra word in the pasuk. But yeah. Rabbi Yehuda would hold that the Chachamim have the ability, when it's Shev Al Pasa, we learned about this in Yavamas, to say that something that Torah says to do, if there's a concern that it'll lead to undesirable side effects, then you have Shev Al Pasa, you can avoid doing it. The Chachamim don't have the power to tell you to do something against what the Torah says, but they have the ability in certain cases to tell you to not do something that the Torah would have otherwise told you to do. If she was wearing white clothes, then you cover her with black clothes, again, to make her look unattractive. Obviously, this is before the clothes are ripped. And the Rambam adds, if black clothes look good on her, then you put on her unattractive clothes, whatever. The point is to make her look unattractive. If she has on her gold jewelry or kapliyos, Rashi says it's like a brooch or a, some kind of a collar around her, kind of like a semicircular collar around her neck, or rings or earrings or finger rings, mavir mimena, they take it all off her, kedelanavla, in order to make her unattractive. V'achachach maybe chevel mitzri. After that, the kohen brings a mitzri rope. So what is that? So Rashi says mitzri, the literal meaning of mitzri is Egyptian. And the Yerushalmi, in fact, says that it has to be taka, one that comes from Egypt, because we're going to talk later on, the Gemara is going to talk beginning on Dachet, there's going to be a whole mishnah explaining how each detail of the whole procedure of the sota is midah keneged midah, for something that a zona tends to, that a woman who's mizana tends to do. One of them is, the Yerushalmi says, the mitzvim were known to be very, very, very promiscuous, kamasa eretz mitzrayim leitasa, therefore you bring an Egyptian rope to remind her of that. You acted like the mitzvim did, you didn't act like a Jewish woman, sure.
It must be very different, it's recognizable.
Well, so Rashi says a little differently. Rashi says that chevel mitzri doesn't mean where it comes from. Mitzri means osi mitzurei gekel. It's made from the ivy, or the growths or whatever that grow around palm trees. So mitzri meloshen mitzuri. It could be both. Either, and according to that, it would mean it's like a very common, coarse kind of rope. But, putting that together with what the Yerushalmi says, it may be both. It was something made out of the palm fibers, as well as it came from Egypt. The kosher of the Milamita, he ties it above her breast, because at this point, her clothes have been torn. If you don't tie something to hold them up, they're going to fall down. The cholah roitz of liros baldi roitz. Anybody who wants to come see the whole thing can come see. Chutz me'avadeh b'shivchaseh, except for her male or female slaves. And peshaliba gaspahen, because she's comfortable around them. You want to make her uncomfortable in order that she'll confess, and then that way again avoid, first of all, the Abish's name having to be erased, and second of all, that if she's guilty, that she'll end up dying the death of the soldier. If you have
people
it doesn't say, but anybody who wanted could wait. Yeah. Anybody who was there in the Azara, yeah. You don't want people that she's comfortable with to be around there, because they'll make her feel stronger and more self-confident. So all women are allowed to see her. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, and Yechezkel, talking about the Yechezkel gives a long marshal over there about how the Jewish people have been unfaithful to the Eibishter. And he says that at the end you're going to get what you're supposed to get. Benivasu kol anoshim, all the women will be chastised. V'lo yisaseinu kizimaschena, and they won't act like your infidelity. So we see, therefore, in other words, so the point is that you want other women. Well, in other words, when they see what's going on to her, like they'll take a lesson from them. I would never want such a thing to happen to me. I'll be extra careful to not avoid any kind of impropriety like this. That I'm actually right in Moran Avuchim, that this is the reason why the Torah makes the soldier go through this whole humiliation, precisely in order that other women who see it should take an object lesson for themselves and then make sure to stay away from such things. Yeah. Which, by the way, I mean, so here you have, the Mishnah had started saying that anybody can watch, and then it's saying that women are allowed to watch. So what is it? Are men allowed to or not? We'll deal with that tomorrow in the Gemara. Going back to, by the way, when we say that the Kohen would grab a hold of her clothes and rip them, etc., first of all, the order, by the way, that we have things is a little bit out of order over here. The Rambam paskins that the order of things, the way the things are done to the Sota, is distinctly different than we have it over here. Besides the fact that the Mishnah had mentioned the black clothes only after the tearing, where necessarily the black clothes have to be before the tearing, because otherwise, what? You're tearing her clothes and then putting an untorn black dress on her, that doesn't help anything. But besides that also, we haven't even talked about...
First
they put the black dress on her, and then they tear that. Yeah.
Instead of tearing
the whatever she's wearing then, and then putting the dress. Yeah. Because that would defeat the purpose. If the whole purpose is that she's standing there with part of her body exposed that wouldn't normally be to humiliate her, then how does it help if afterwards you're putting... Yeah. But besides that also, we haven't even talked about the sota's mincha yet. We haven't talked about the kohen giving her the whole thing. If you've been unfaithful, then this is going to happen. If you haven't been unfaithful, then this is going to happen, which we're going to talk about in the second and third parak. Only the Rambam puts this business about they tear her clothes towards the end, even though our Mishnah is putting it very early in the procedure. And we'll learn as we go through.
Is it done in the day?
No, well, Pashas, yeah, could be done. But we're talking about the whole procedure over here. The Amman puts this near the end of the procedure, like right shortly before she's given the water to drink. Whereas here we have it long before. We'll talk about it. We'll talk about it as we go through the different opinions of Tanoim and Amiroim of the precise order of things. Anyway, another thing to mention, by the way, is we're saying that a Kohen would grab a hold of her clothes and tear them. Which Kohen? So Tosfos brings the Tosfos brings actually an interesting thing, that what they would do is they would make a girdle for it. They would make a girdle, and whoever the girdle picked, even if it was the Kohen girdle, would be the one to do it. The different Mephoreshim talk about the possibilities. Does the Tosfos mean that if a Kohen volunteered to do it, they could go ahead, but if nobody volunteered, then they would do this girdle? Or do we mean you would always do a girdle to begin with, because you don't want any Kohen to be suspected of, oh, I'm rushing to do it because I want to have a chance to look at her hair and her body. How do we know this, that we say that you have to bring her to the Beis Din HaGadol? So Rashi says that we have to bring her to Yerushalayim, of course, because you have to bring her to Lifnei Hashem. But there's three Batei Dinim on the Har HaBayis alone. There's two smaller Batei Dinim of 23 members each, and then there's the Beis Din HaGadol of 71. Who says she has to be brought Dafka to the 71 member? Beis Din. Ask your Torah, Torah, because we make a Gzeira Shava between the two words Torah. In the parasha Sota, it says that the Kohen should do to her according to all this Torah. And in connection with the Din of Zakin Mamre, it says that you should follow the Torah that they tell you. And the Din of Zakin Mamre only applies if he disobeyed the Beis Din HaGadol. And that's how the whole thing of Zakin Mamre works. That you have a case is going up and up through the various levels of Batei Dinim, and eventually it reaches the Sanhedrin, and they pass in one way or the other, or not even vote, they have a Kabbalah, whatever it is. And then if you have a Talmid Chacham, who's capable himself of passing Halacha, who goes and passes against them, then he's a Zakin Mamre. But it's only if he goes against the Beis Din HaGadol. Therefore, we see that the same thing by the Sotah, it has to be the Beis Din HaGadol. Ma lahalam b'shivim ve'echad, achan b'shivim ve'echad. So based on that, since that we know that it's the Beis Din HaGadol, we learn from because the pasuk says min ha'makom asher yivchar Hashem, that the Beis Din that's sitting in the place in the case of Zakin Mamre. The pasuk says over there that's the Beis Din that sits in the place that Hashem has chosen, which is the great Sanhedrin that would sit in the Beis Hamikdash itself, in the Azara, or right outside the Azara, whatever. Since there, it's Shivim Be'echad, Akan B'Shivim Be'echad. The same thing by the Sotah, it has to be the 71 member based in. Tosfos brings up a point, though, that is it necessarily that you have to have, are we saying that necessarily you have to have the Beis Din HaGadol? What if, for example, Tosfos mentions, we know that 40 years before the Churban and the Beis Din HaGadol left the Lishkas HaGadol and moved elsewhere on the Har HaBayis. On the other hand, we say at the end of the Masechta that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai stopped doing the Mesota anymore because he said at that point there were too many promiscuous people and therefore it's not working. And Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai only became the Nasi within 40 years before the Churban. So he was Nasi for 40 years and he lived a few years after the Churban. So Tosfos wants to say that actually maybe it's not Le'ikuva. It's the purpose of having the Beis Din HaGadol involved over here is they're the ones who give her the warning that we mentioned on Amud Aleph, warning her that and trying to convince her to not drink the water, to not go through the whole thing. But if they're not available, or if they're not in the Beis Din HaGadol, okay, so you have another Beis Din do it, or maybe you don't have anybody to give that warning, but you can still go ahead with it anyway. Basically. I'm in a level. Then the Mishnah continued that they warn her and they tell her, they try to convince her to not go through with it. The Gemara says, "Raminu, I have a contradiction." And Braita says differently. Keterach shema I'm in a layer shaloi tishte, just like they warn her not to drink. Kachma I'm in a layer shetishte. So they also warn her. They try to convince her to drink. Namely, Omrimla, they tell her, "Bitti, my daughter,
in not to drink."
But they also convince her to drink. So they tell a bitty in Boro Lo Hadova Shetahorat, if you're certain that you're Tahor, in the Abuyech, then stand on your Buyech. Rashi says Buyech means your Nikios, your cleanliness. You say you're clean of the Savera, good, then stand on that. In other words, stick to that argument. Or the Me'iri says that Buyech can also mean your definite claim, so stick to your definite claim. v'shti, and don't be worried about the possible consequences. Because this bitter water that you're going to drink is like a dry medicine that's put on healthy skin. Im yesha maka, if there's a wound over there, machal chavayir, then it penetrates. Im yesha maka, and if there's no wound over there, nothing happens. So the same thing with the mei soicha is only going to have that terrible effect that's described in the pasuk only if you're guilty. So if you really say you're innocent, then fine, stick to that, and then don't be afraid to drink the water. So the Braitha is saying that they do convince her. Why is the Mishnah only telling her that they try to convince her not to drink? Answer is like Kasha, kan kodib shenimcha megillah, kan la'acha shenimcha megillah. Our Mishnah is talking about what they tell her before the Megillah has been erased, before the Eibishter's name has been erased. Then we only tell her, we try to convince her not to go through with it, because we don't want the Eibishter's name to be erased.
Not too late. Once it's been erased.
That's the point. Once it's been erased, it
has to drink.
So that's the thing. We're going to talk later on the details, but basically, once it's been erased, you have, there's three possibilities. She can say, yes, I'm Tahor, I'll go ahead and drink. She can say, I'm Tomei. Or she can say, I'm not saying I'm Tomei, but I don't want to drink. Now, so what happens? If she says, I want to go ahead and drink, good. Okay, then go ahead. If she says, I'm Tomei, we stop the whole thing right there. We never have her drink if she says, I'm Tomei. The third case, though, if she says, I still maintain I'm Tahor, but I'm afraid to drink the water, but the water has already been prepared, the Eibishter's name has already been erased, that's when the Braitha is saying, they start convincing her, you know what, then if you say you're Tahor, go ahead and drink. Don't be afraid.
Are they force her physically?
We'll talk about later, yes. If she's not convinced but still maintains she's Tahor, then yes, they will. Okay, but I'm for now. And then the Mishnah had said that they tell her things that she doesn't deserve to hear, namely, I'm for now. Dvarim shel Haggadah. They tell her words of Agadta, umaisim she'iru b'ksuvim arishonim, and incidents that happen in the earlier parts of Tanakh, meaning in Chumash. To Goin, for example, they tell her the following. The pasuk in Iyov says, Asher chachamim yagidu, that the chachamim tell over what they did, and they did not hide it, they didn't try to hide it from their fathers. What is this passage talking about? Yehuda hoida v'leibosh. Yehuda admitted and was not embarrassed when Tamar said, well, but he admitted, sub to many. Yeah, exactly, he said sub to many, yeah. But he wasn't embarrassed, meaning he wasn't too embarrassed to hold back and say, I won't say anything. I want my dignity to be preserved. Mahayasofa, and what did he get in the end? Nacho chayo en abba. He inherited the life of Adam Abba. Reuben hoida v'leibosh. Because we know that he did. Reuben hoida v'leibosh. Reuben admitted that what happened with Bilhah over there, that they moved the bed or whatever. Again, Mahayasofa, Nacho chayo en abba. And what was his end? He also inherited the life of Adam Abba. And the Braitha continues in Maschoran, and what was the reward? What do you mean, Maschoran? What do you mean, what's the reward? Could come in, and we just said they inherited Olam Abba. Ela Maschoran ba'olam hazeh, what reward did Reuven and Yehuda get for admitting in this world, which again, this is all we're trying to convince the Sota, that you shouldn't be afraid to admit also. As the Pasuk continues, the next Pasuk in Eiv over there continues, Lahem levadam nitna ha'aret, to them alone was the land given, and no stranger passed among them. So what does that mean? So Rashi says it means that Reuben and Yehuda both got certain advantages. Yehuda got the kingship. Reuben got the very first portion of Eivor Hayagin, of the land that the Jewish people ended up settling.
Just because they admitted?
Because they admitted. There's other explanations as well. There's another explanation that Nitziv says that both of them, Reuven was the first one who got in the Eivor Hayagin, and Yehuda is the first one who got in Eretz Yisrael proper. That's what we mean. That's what we mean. Tosfos brings a different explanation, nothing to do with the division of Eretz Yisrael in the time of Yeshua, but rather the division of La'asid Lavay. In Sefer Yechezkel, at the end, it describes how La'asid Lavay Eretz Yisrael is going to be redivided into 13 strips, one for each Shevet, and one which parts of it are going to belong to the Nasi, and middle of it is going to be Yerushalayim and the Beis Hamikdash, and places for the Kohanim and Levim and so forth. Directly south of that strip is a strip set aside for Yehuda, and the next one south of that is for Reuven. So V'lo Ovar Zor B'Soicham, no stranger passes between them. They get to be together. That's what we mean. Yeah, in the time of Mashiach. Okay, so Okay, so Yehuda, we see in the pasuk that he admitted. Yehuda recognized the personal effects that he left with Tamar, that she brought out as a proof, and he said she's more righteous than me. Well, later on, actually, the Gemara is going to say Tzadka. He said Tzadka. She's righteous, and the Bachfor came out and said Mimeni. I'm the one who planned the whole thing. Anyway, El Reuven and Alam Da'odi. Where do we ever see that Reuven admitted? It's like this. The Amr of Shmuel Manachmeni, Amr of Yechanan, or of Yonasan, it's really supposed to be. We learn it from the following Durasha. My Dechsev, what does it mean in Moshe Rabbein's Bracha, in Rezoit HaBracha, to the Shvatim, he says, Yechi Reuven Val Yomos, may Reuven live and not die. And the next pasuk is Rezoit Yehuda, and this for Yehuda. So first of all, why is Yehuda right after Reuven? Levi should be in between. And second of all, why Rezoit Yehuda? It's an unusual way of starting it. Like this, Kol Ois and Shonim Shor Yisrael B'Midbar, throughout all the years that the Jewish people were in the desert, the bones of Yehuda were rolling around in his coffin. Now, we know the Pasuk mentions they brought out Yosef's coffin from Mitzrayim, but in fact they brought the coffins of all the other Shvatim as well, and buried them, and afterwards they buried them in their respective territories.
So Mugulgolin means
what? So Mugulgolin means exactly that. They were rolling around, because his body fell apart in the coffin and was not staying together. The reason for that, Rashi says, is it goes back to in Parashat Mikates, when the brothers are going back and forth to Mitzrayim, and at the second time they have to bring Binyamin, because the Egyptian viceroy is demanding they bring Binyamin, otherwise he won't allow them into the country. So Yehuda convinces Yaakov, send Binyamin with me, and if I don't bring him back safely, then I'll have sinned against my father for forever. Which means basically that he was putting himself in a conditional nidui. And the Gemara explains in Makkos, this Gemara also appears in Makkos, that a nidui, even based on a tnai, needs hataras nidor, needs to be mutter. You need to do hataras nidui on it. Yehuda never had hataras nidui done. Therefore, in token of that, not only is Neshama had, we never find that he was master of that nidui. He accepted that nidui on himself, and we never find that he took steps to undo it. There are Mephoshim who point out that even in the literal sense he didn't fulfill it, because one way of looking at it is that Yosef kept Binyamin with him in Mitzrayim, even after he revealed himself to his brothers. He said, let Binyamin stay here, the rest of you go back home and bring Yaakov, I don't want to be separated from Binyamin. So therefore, literally, Yehuda never brought back Binyamin to Yaakov. Okay, later Yaakov came to Mitzrayim, but he never brought Binyamin back to him. Anyway. So therefore, so not only Yehuda's neshama wasn't at rest because of the nidui, but in talking about his body also was rolling around in the coffin and then falling apart. Until Moshe Rabbeinu came along and davened for rachamim for him. Amal Afanav, he says, look, after all, who caused Reuven to admit what he did? Yehuda. It was because Yehuda admitted in the story of Tamar, so Rashi brings... Rashi brings from Medrash Tanchuma that yes, when Yehuda said Tzadka Mimeni, then Reuven also stood up and said, you know what, I also have what to admit. So up until then, we know Reuven had been doing tshuva for some time before that. We know when Yosef was sold, where was Reuven? He put Yosef in the pit, told the brothers to put Yosef in the pit, and then went, where did he go? Yosef was sacked at the time. So he's fasting, he's wearing sackcloth or whatever, but he'd never admitted publicly.
No,
that was because of the Yitzhak Yavid thing. Why is he in sackcloth and then fasting and whatever? Because of the incident of Billy.
Why did he take the bet out? Because
Rashi says on the pasuk, because he figured, you know, it's one thing that Rachel outranked Leah, my mother, fine, really, you know, Yaakov originally loved Rachel, he wanted to marry her first, etc., but that Billah should outrank her? How you talking? He was concerned for his mother's cover. Anyway, so Reuven had been doing tshuva for many years, but only when Yehuda admitted publicly did Reuven do the same thing. So that's what he means. So Yochi Reuven Val Yomis. Reuven is going to live and not die because he did tshuva. The Zois for Yehuda. Is it right that the Zois for Yehuda is not a statement, and this is for Yehuda, it's a question, and this is for Yehuda, that he should be rolling around in his coffin? How are you talking? He deserves better than that. He's the one who caused that Yechi Reuven Val Yomis, yeah. Therefore...
But
Moshe is davening for him, that after all, you consider the fact that he caused Reuven to do tshuva. That's a tremendous thing. Miyad Shema Hashem Kol Yehuda. So immediately Moshe davened for him. Hashem listened to the voice of Yehuda, the voice that he admitted and then caused Reuven to admit. So all Olivori L'Shachar. So then Yehuda's body parts reconnected. L'Shachar literally means the place where they got torn out of, like the body got reassembled. V'loy Habakama Ayin L'Masivta D'Rakia. But so his body is at rest now, but his neshama was not being allowed into the Masivta D'Rakia, into the Yeshiva Shabbailah. Because he still was still the problem of the Nidui. So Moshe had to continue davening for him. The whole prophet goes, Shema Shekel Yehuda, Hashem listened to the voice of Yehuda, Ve'el Amay to the end, bring him back to his people, Yodav Ravloi, may his hands be powerful for him, Ve'ezem Mitzorav Tiyah, and be a help for him from his enemies. So the Gemara is dashing each of these phrases. So Shema Hashem Kol Yehuda, Hashem listened to the voice of Yehuda that he called. So Ve'zois Yehuda, this should be for Yehuda. Shema Hashem Kol Yehuda, Hashem listened to the voice of Yehuda. So that he still wasn't being allowed into the Sifted Rakia. So Moshe had to continue davening. He says, well, I'm going to be in it. Bring him to his people. Who are his people? The Tzaddikim, who are in Gan Eden. So now he's being allowed into the Yeshiva Shabbailah. But he didn't have the ability to discuss in learning together with the other Chachamim over there. So Moshe had to continue, because he's still the after effects of the Nidra. Yeah. So therefore, Moshe had to continue davening for him. Yodav Rav Loi, may his hands be powerful for him, that he should have the power, the ability to get involved in the discussion. Loi have a chesalta loi shmaite al libid hilchasa, but he still was missing something. He still couldn't come to conclusions that are valid up yalacha, which shows there's a certain aspect of a course that's missing from him. So therefore, Moshe had to finish off the ezem itzarav tiyah, be a help to him from his foes, from his enemies. Meaning that he should be able to not just be involved in the battle of Torah, but to win it.
What
are the hands? The hands, that's a, I mean, you use your hands. No, but your hands should be power. Like you know, hands are a metaphor for power. That you should have the power to learn. The Ezem Tzara Tia, and that you should have the power to come up with Shmaita Al-Libur de Hilfasa.
Who are the Tzarem?
All the other Chachamim who are arguing against him, yeah. The Maharal explains this all on a Ruchniistic level. There's different, you know, first Yehuda was like completely in the Gashmiistic world, which therefore that's expressed as his bones were apart, because all world is a world of fragmentation. So Moshe had the first daven, then he starts going up into the Ruchniistic world, which are worlds of unity, and then that he should be connected to the mind of Hashem, which is that he should have the ability to discuss in halacha, and then ultimately they should have the ultimate closeness with Hashem. So the Gemara says, "Bishlemi Yehuda de Oidi, Hechid Leit Yisar of Tamar." Fine, let's go back to the story a minute. We understand why Yehuda had to admit publicly what happened over here in order that Tamar shouldn't get burnt. Elad Ruvain Lomele de Oidi, but why indeed did Ruvain admit publicly? Well, Amar Rav Sheshes, in fact, didn't Rav Sheshes say, "Chotzif alai bar Yisrael, the Makrit Chatoi," that I consider it chutzvedik a yid. Bar Yisrael is in parenthesis because it was actually added by the censor. I'll tell you an interesting thing that Reuven Margolius says on this in a second. So chotzif alai man de makrit chatoi. I consider it chutzpedik, somebody who publicly tells his averus in public, because then it implies that he's not embarrassed of them. So why is Reuven saying it publicly? The answer is kechdo lechshu achuri. Yes, but in this case, you have to make sure that his brothers aren't suspected. Yaakov came and saw that his bed had been moved. He didn't know who had done it. Could have been any one of Leah's kids. So all this time, Yaakov would have been suspecting the brothers, so therefore Reuven finds it necessary to admit publicly in order to clear all of that.
Couldn't go to his father privately.
But then, so one of the Mephoshim points that out, and he says, yes, but the brothers then wouldn't know that now Yaakov doesn't suspect him anymore. So in order to make sure that everybody knows, he had no choice but to say it publicly. And in fact, actually, the Gemara in Yuma mentions there are certain cases where you should admit publicly. One of them is where the Avera is well known by the public. Then go ahead and admit it. You're not publicizing something that's already not known. And the other thing is if it's an Avera, Bein Adam L'Chaveri, as opposed to Bein Adam L'Makom. What Rav Sheshes is saying over here, Chotzef Alay Man D'Mafrit Chatoi, is talking about where it's an Avera between a person and the Eivishter, and it's not publicly known. And like our Gemara is saying over here, there's nothing that you need to do to clear somebody else's name. Then to announce it publicly would be a bazillion to the Eivishter. It's like saying, I want to publicize that Aveda has been done. I'm not embarrassed by it, basically. So what does Bar Yisrael business? Reuven Margolius says an interesting thing. The Goyim have a concept of confession to their priests. So therefore, they didn't like this idea. What do you mean, chutzpah la'iman d'mafritz chatoi, to announce your averus is chutzpah? So therefore, they changed it to Bar Yisrael. It was just man, somebody, which could include goyim as well, so, yeah. Okay.